Over the last couple of weeks, I've been watching a show on Netflix. I think it's called Nature's Weirdest Events. It's a really fascinating show. It was aired on BBC. But they talk about things like these major sinkholes that happen from time to time. Several of them have happened in Florida. And so all of a sudden, right in the middle of a community, will just be this giant hole in the ground. Few of them have happened in China and other places in the world. And they'd interview some of the folks who lived around these holes. And they talk about it and they say, it is just the weirdest thing. We are so surprised by this. All of a sudden, now in the middle of our neighborhood, there is literally this giant hole. Or there was this huge fish die-off off the coast of California. Millions of fish died overnight. And so folks talked about how surprised they were by all of these fish dying and the smell that came with millions of fish dying all at one time. Then there was this bird die-off in Arkansas. All of a sudden, these red-winged blackbirds just start raining from the sky. And these folks you know how it goes when they interview folks like on TV and stuff. It's always interesting to hear what people say. But these folks from Central Arkansas were just talking about one night, birds just started raining from the sky. They thought it was hail, but it was actually birds coming down. Or we're talking about basketball-size hail. So these events in nature, they surprise us. They catch our attention. They catch us off guard, perhaps. What we see throughout Scripture is that almost on every page, Genesis all the way through Revelation, continually we're surprised by God's actions, by what God says. Oftentimes, we approach Scripture, and I think we approach God in formulaic terms. We come to Scripture like we do an algebra lesson. And so we think A plus B equals C, right? We think about God in that way. This happens, so God is supposed to do this. Or God's people are supposed to act in this way. So we have this very rigid, almost formulaic approach to God and His Word. Now, I think what we should understand after reading Scripture so much, and many of us growing up in church, what we should do is after a while not be so surprised by how God acts. And more to the point, I think now we should have our eyes opened to God working in all kinds of different ways and have our ears open to God saying all kinds of different things. And so what we're going to see in Joshua chapter 2 is once again, God surprises us. Chapter 2, verse 1, book of Joshua. Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. Go look over the land, he said, especially Jericho. So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. So Joshua's first order of business. Remember, he's the new leader following in the footsteps of Moses. First order of business, go check the land out. Makes sense. The spies' first order of business, go to a prostitute's house. A note concerning this word prostitute. Some translators have argued that this word should be translated as innkeeper. Not the case. The word for prostitute, or the word here that is translated prostitute, is the word prostitute. And remember, the New Testament writers, when they talk about Rahab, refer to Rahab as a prostitute. There is no substantial evidence for the translation, innkeeper. Rahab is a prostitute, a harlot. Verses 2-6. The king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. Apparently, these are some terrible spies. They were found out pretty quickly. Verse 3. So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab. Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come to spy out the whole land. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. She said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, they left. I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them." But she had taken them and put them on the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid at flax she had laid out on the roof. So here's the first surprise we see here. Rahab, the prostitute, the Canaanite prostitute, hides these Israelite spies. She puts herself at risk in doing this, harboring some of the enemy's spies. She could have been killed because of these actions, but she chose to save these guys' skin. Now, she hides them under these stalks of flax. It was very common for people to put grain or stalks on the roof to dry them out. So this makes sense. She has them go up to the roof. It's also very common to be able to get up on the top of your house and walk around. So she puts them up there and then hides them under this grain or these stalks. Makes sense. Verse 7. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. So cities at this time, they had gates, and all traffic would pass through these gates. Sometimes there'd be one gate. Sometimes there'd be four or five gates per city. But all traffic would go through these gates. Verse 8. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, "I know that the Lord has given you this land, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below." So here's the second surprise in this story. Rahab's proclamation concerning God. She says, "For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below." This is the Canaanite prostitute that is saying this about Yahweh, the one true God. Try to get your mind around what's taking place here. You have two Israelite spies standing on the roof now, and you also have Rahab, the prostitute. You would think that they would be conversing about services rendered. I won't go into details about what I mean there, but think about her occupation. And instead of that, what she is talking about is protection, and even more to the point about how God, Yahweh, is the one true God. We're surprised by this, or at least we ought to be. Rahab is making these claims. She says the people of Jericho are afraid. All the people were melting in fear because of the Israelite army. Let's hold on to that. As we work through the book of Joshua, we need to remember that the people had heard about the Israelite army and their God. They were melting in fear because of the people. What's going to be disturbing to us as we move forward in the book of Joshua is to see that although the people were melting in fear, oftentimes it was the Israelites who were in fact melting in fear. So remember that statement by Rahab here in chapter 2. Verse 12 now. "Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family." That word kindness there is the Hebrew word hesed. It's a very important word. It's the same word that is used when talking about God's covenant faithfulness toward the people. "Because I have shown kindness, hesed, to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death." So she asks for protection. And I think she's doing this, I would imagine, let's put it that way, that she's doing this with some desperation in her voice. She understands what's coming for her people. She understands that death is right around the corner for her unless she gets help. And so she says, "Please, save me and save my family." Verses 14 through 21. "Our lives for our lives," is how they respond. "If you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land." So she let them down by a rope through the window, for the house she lived in was part of the city wall. This makes me wonder how she's going to survive, since we know in just a few days the walls of Jericho are going to come down. I think this is pointing to the power of God at work. But that's a side note. That's for next week's lesson. Verse 16. She said to them, "Go to the hills so the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourselves there 3 days until they return, and then go on your way." Now the men had said to her, "This oath you made us swear will not be binding on us unless when we enter the land, you have tied this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, unless you have brought your father and mother, your brothers, and all your family into your house. If any of them go outside your house, into the street, their blood will be on their heads. We will not be responsible. As for those who are in the house with you, their blood will be on our head if a hand is laid on them. But if you tell what we are doing, we will be released from the oath you made us swear." "Agreed," she replied. "Let it be as you say." So she sent them away, and they departed. And she tied the scarlet cord in the window. So this cord, which is the same color as the blood that covered the door frames of the Israelites' houses, is now going to protect her from death. This scarlet cord, and the word there for cord in the Hebrew sounds an awful lot like the word for hope in the Hebrew, is going to bring both Rahab and her family hope. The Israelites will protect this woman. And that's the third surprise. We'll talk about that more next week. But Rahab, the Canaanite prostitute, is going to be saved from death from the Israelite army. Verses 22 through 24. When they left, they went into the hills and stayed there 3 days, until the pursuers had searched all along the road and returned without finding them. Then the two men started back. They went down out of the hills toward the river and came to Joshua, son of Nun, and told him everything that had happened to them. They said to Joshua, "The Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us." And so they go and reiterate the words of Rahab to Joshua. It's go time. Right? In just a few days, Joshua is going to lead them in battle in Jericho. But let's not miss the surprises in this text. Just for a moment, I want us to note what is said about Rahab in the New Testament. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 31 says, "By faith the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient." By faith, it says, the prostitute Rahab, she's mentioned in that section of Scripture, Hebrews 11, that we often refer to as the heroes of faith, this Canaanite woman. And then James chapter 2 and verse 25. "In the same way, was not even Rahab, the prostitute, considered righteous for what she did when she gave lodging to the spies and sent them off in a different direction?" And so when James is talking to the Christians about having a faith that is lived out, that is tangible, that you can see, he doesn't talk about Joshua. He talks about Rahab, and specifically this incident. So the three surprises again. Rahab, she hides the spies, putting her life at risk. She proclaims that God is the one true God. And the other surprise is the Israelites are going to follow through on their word. They're going to protect this prostitute. These two passages I'm about to read, they speak to God's incredible ability. And that's an understatement to say God's incredible ability, His unfathomable ways of doing things. And so Jeremiah chapter 32 and verse 27, "I am the Lord, the God of all mankind. Is anything too hard for me?" To reach out and bring Rahab into a relationship with Him, is that too hard for God? Absolutely not. Or how about Matthew 19 and verse 26? Jesus looked up at them and said, "With man, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible." Can a Canaanite prostitute proclaim that Yahweh is the one true God? With God, all things are possible. And so often, this is where I was getting at with like approaching God and church and the Bible and like, like it's algebra class, A plus B equals C. If we were writing the story, if we were orchestrating these events, this isn't how we would do it, is it? We couldn't get our minds even around acting this way or writing it this way. With God, a person like Rahab says, your God is God in heaven above. We so often are limited in our thinking and our approach to God and to life in general. We like things to be neat and tidy. The Rahab story, it rails against that. There are some questions that I have about this text. Perhaps these are some questions that have been bouncing around in your mind as well. So why did the spies go to a prostitute's house? Second verse, why did they go there? We do know that Rahab's house was in the city wall. So maybe it just had to do with proximity to their entrance into Jericho. Or, as I've already mentioned, were these not the worst spies in the world getting caught so quickly? Or what we might call situational ethics. When is it okay to lie? Remember what Rahab said when the men came to her? They went that way. Right? That's situational ethics. You remember these classes in high school and college when you talk about this? Is it ever okay to tell a little fib, or let's call it what it is, a lie? I don't have any answers for you, but these are things that kind of make us scratch our heads, and I do have questions about them, but some of the stuff that I'm very certain about in this text, in this event, is that God surprises us. And God's grace has a way of doing that. He uses unlikely people to accomplish his purposes. Remember Gideon, the guy that was hiding, was so weak, and God says, I'm going to use you to accomplish my purposes. Or how about Moses, the excuse maker, thinking of Exodus chapter 3 and 4. Not me, God. No way. I don't speak well. I'm not a leader. I don't have charisma. I'm just not into this right now. And God says, I'm going to use you to lead the people out of Egypt. Or how about Jeremiah? Too young, too weak. Got the wrong guy, God. Or Joseph, the dreamer and the bragger. He's kind of a bragger, isn't he? God says, I'm going to use you to accomplish my purposes. Or Paul, persecuting Christians. Paul? The great apostle, the one that's going to write a good chunk of the New Testament, the one who's breathing murderous threats against Christians, is going to be a guy. Or Peter, the hothead, right? Thomas, the doubter. God surprises us. You. God uses you. If you knew everything about me, you'd be like, there is no way that that guy should be up here right now. I hope that God's using me to accomplish his purposes. I hope that he's using you to accomplish his purposes. He uses a Canaanite prostitute to accomplish his purposes. You. He uses you. He uses me. And so can you imagine if all of Leander and Cedar Park were saying, just like Rahab, the Lord your God, the one that the Leander Church of Christ worships, that's the one true God, the Lord of heaven and earth. You imagine that person that you would never dream of sitting in here on a Sunday, worshiping God or serving. Could you imagine that that person be sitting right next to you, worshiping God? God's in the business of surprising us. What about all of us? Can you imagine all of us praying that God would use us in surprising ways? And then, most importantly, having our minds blown when he does exactly that. Do you pray for that? You desire that. I want us to finish in a weird place this morning, in a genealogy of all places. Matthew chapter 1, verses 1 through 6. A genealogy of all places. I'm going to read through this kind of quickly. I want you all to guess why we're reading from Matthew chapter 1 right now. Genealogies, that's the ultimate bore fest, right? But look at this, okay? This is the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac, Isaac the father of Jacob, Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers, Judah the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar, Perez the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nahshon, Nahshon the father of Salmon, Salmon the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab, Boaz the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth, Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of King David. Why did we just read that? Salmon, or Salmon, I don't know, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Surprise. Rahab is in the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah. There she is. So Rahab protected the spies. Surprise. She made a faithful proclamation about God. Surprise. She was saved by the Israelite army. Surprise. She's in the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah. Surprise. God has a heart for Rahab. God has a heart for your neighbor. God has a heart for the waiter or waitress that is going to serve you here in just a few minutes. God has a heart for Dale, the kid that came to the Echo Meadows Church of Christ, where my family still attends, on the Joy Bus. I've mentioned Dale to you before. I was disgusted by him. He kind of weirded me out, to be quite truthful. I mean, don't be too harsh on me. I was like 9 years old at the time. But even then, I realized like who the normal kids were and then who the not so normal kids were, right? I don't even know where I fell in that exactly, but I wasn't very introspective at that time in my life. But I remember thinking, I don't want to be around him. I don't want to interact with him. He came on the bus, came from a broken home, smelled a little bit. God has a heart for Dale. God has a heart for you. God has a heart for me. And so the challenge this morning is really simple. Pray. Pray for God to work in unimaginable ways in your life, in the life of this congregation, at this time, in this place, and stand ready to be surprised. If there's anybody here today that desires the prayers of the church family, as usual, we would be glad to pray with you. We are a group of people that are willing to share with one another. We live in fellowship with one another, which simply means that we share life together. So if you have anything you want to bring to our attention that you'd like us to pray for, we'd be glad to pray with you. If there's anybody here today that is ready to be buried in the waters of baptism, to find that new life in Jesus, we would love to witness you make that incredible statement of faith today. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward now as we stand and continue to worship the God who surprises.